Good morning, Council and staff. I'd like to call this meeting to order and begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Are there any announcements, acknowledgements, and recognitions? Hearing none, no public input. Approval of the agenda. Moved by Councillor Haysom, seconded by Deputy Mayor Hobley. All those in favour? Motion carried unanimously. Approval of the minutes of September 5th, 2023. Moved by Mayor Balafagetson, seconded by Councillor Vino. Ready for the question? All those in favour? Wendy and Martin? In favour?
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Motion carried unanimously. Now we will go right down to 10.1. We have Christy Chaplin here, and you're not due until 9:15. Did you want to start early, or are you waiting for anybody else?
I'm not waiting for anyone.
Okay. Did you want to start early?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Don't be nervous around us.
A slide deck.
It's on. It's already loaded on that computer. The one right. The
just
computer
left
front
the screen.
Up here.
Yeah. Is it there?
Yes. Good morning, and thank you for having me back. I'm with a not-for-profit organization called Net Zero Atlantic. My first presentation on their behalf was. To
Is her
council.
Microphone on?
Can you lift maybe your podium up a little bit so that you're a little bit closer to the mic?
Not physically, there's a button.
There you go. That might help. There we go.
And during that presentation in June, there were several really excellent questions that I found helpful. I did respond in writing within probably a couple of weeks of that. But today's the opportunity for me to offer you a few slides that speak to those questions.
Just a sec, something just happened to the slides. Just the connection's probably loosened.
Probably just the cord got loose.
Set. I'm just going to switch it up and get back to it.
I can see them.
Yeah. Well, we weren't scheduled to start till 9:15 anyway. So.
Did it work?
Keep my fingers crossed. I have no internet at home, and my electrical service blew up on Friday. Otherwise, this would have been my first attempt at a virtual presentation. Fortunately, I live close enough so that I could be here. Not advancing. There we go. I believe it was Councillor Letha Haysom who offered the question about end of useful life, which I understand would be of particular interest to municipalities since waste management is the responsibility at that level of government. The research I did indicated that most of the components are and have been recycled since the beginning. Steel, copper wire, electronics, all of those things are readily recycled, but blades have been problematic. It's a very important question. There are a lot of turbines on the in the planet that are starting to come to end of useful life. So the good news is that there are new materials that have been developed specifically designed to address this problem. They are either using different types of thermoset plastics or thermoplastics that are designed to be repurposed. So at the end of the useful life, when there's been too much physical strain to continue using them, the materials can actually be dissolved, filtered, and reconstituted. And you'll see in my punchline at the end, I'm trying to build the dialogue, make sure people have information about what could be coming our way in terms of a new industry. And the federally initiated regional assessment is my punchline. If people know about these things and talk about them at this stage, we're more likely to have development that we're happy with in the long term. And there is a lot of momentum at both the provincial and federal levels to realize this opportunity, which I think overall is not a bad thing. But things can be done well and things can be done badly. And, of course, we know what we're hoping for. There was another question about revenue models. Did you ask that one as well? I'm not sure who to credit, but thank you. It created the occasion for me to dig into this a little bit more. People are probably very familiar with lease arrangements, which are purely time-based, and that's been done in the case of areas that are publicly owned, publicly managed, but available to developers for an offshore wind farm. But another option that someone brought forward would be called a royalty payment, meaning there is a component of the government revenues that's tied to the productivity of the wind field. So that's another possibility, and a combination of lease plus royalty is quite typically used in Europe. More risk at the government level would mean taking an equity position. So I believe it's in Ireland right now that there's a lot of momentum, and governments are actually going to take a 20% equity position in any new developments. That's a higher level of risk. And then may I have a sense, how many are familiar with community benefit agreements? Just to a small degree. My understanding is there are essentially two tiers of community benefit agreements. In the case of the offshore oil and gas initiative of 20-some years ago, the regulatory board does require or evaluate local content, so materials, supply chain content. That would be a type of community benefit, and it's quite formalized and regulated. And then there's another tier of community benefits that are less formal, and they can be made between developers and specific stakeholder groups. The obvious group for offshore wind would be fishers, but any other ocean user who might be impacted detrimentally could potentially enter into an agreement with developers that would help make them whole. The intent would be to make them whole, and that would be in exchange for support of a development project. And in some places, community benefit rules are a condition, and I believe was the case for offshore oil and gas in Nova Scotia, and I expect that will carry through. So local content requirements would be the example. Is this all making sense? Is it helpful? Yes. Concerns about impacts on biodiversity, ecosystems. There will be impacts, but they're not necessarily net negative. So according to a study done by the World Wildlife Fund of developments in the North Sea back in 2014, it is possible to have an offshore wind development that has no net negative impact on ecosystems, but there are a number of best practices that are associated with that. And I think my next slide talks about it. So there's a list of concerns. I should talk about the effects. So there's something called a reefing effect. When the installation is made, it acts like a natural system. So creatures that like to cling, mussels, crustaceans generally, will start to inhabit that, just like a man-made, an artificial mussel farm, for example, where they seed and cling. Then their predators will start to move in, and the predators of the predators, and so forth. in some instances, fishing has not been allowed where the offshore wind developments occurred. That, I understand, has become understood to not be necessary, except with certain types of fishing. Trawling is probably going to be incompatible. But what will happen is if fishing is not allowed in the development area, then you get the effect of a reserve. So essentially you've created a bit of a safe haven for those creatures where they're not going to be predated, so the populations can actually be enhanced by having that reserve. And then there are some mitigation technique aspects. So the noise, particularly during construction, can be very disruptive, especially to creatures that will echolocate. And impacts of vibrations, magnetic, electromagnetic waves, those are real concerns. I understand that some navigation is impacted by the electromagnetic waves, and at this point we're starting to get in over my head, I have to admit. And I push hard for this as a piece of content because I think if we're going to talk about the potential negative impacts of offshore wind development on ecosystems, that it's really important to keep front of mind that status quo is very damaging as well. The ocean is the biggest carbon sink on the planet, and it's become overwhelmed so that to the point of acidification, which is making it uninhabitable to a number of creatures. And it's also the biggest heat sink on the planet, which, as we know, is causing marine heat waves that are devastating to coral reefs and that sort of thing. So I think it's important that we are careful about this, but also take a whole perspective. It's amazing that just with the questions you asked me last time, I'm going to gobble up all the time allotted. So here are some of the best practices. So an obvious one would be not to allow construction to take place during reproductive periods in an area for specific species that are there. There are soft start techniques that will reduce the sound impacts of pile driving. Pingers can scare creatures away so that they don't venture into a dangerous area. And avoiding flyways. Very important, not only for offshore wind, but onshore wind as well. When the birds are coming ashore after a long flight, they're going to find the first point of land they can possibly find and want to go there. So that's not where we want to be putting turbines. It depends on ocean currents, whether a bubble curtain is going to make a difference. And I think I wrote it twice, protect flyways. And then there was a question, I believe, from Warden Bolivar Getson, is that right? You're a warden, sorry. Sometimes I heard mayor when I came in the room, and I'm confused by that. But you are mayor? Oh, I'm sorry. So you asked a question about whether the turbines can withstand our conditions. An excellent question. There are techniques for coping with extremes in weather. We have not had new criteria developed for offshore turbines, and that might be necessary. The current criteria for onshore turbines requires that they're capable of withstanding sustained winds of a certain, I think it's 60 kilometers an hour, but I got knots mixed up in my head. Anyway, the current standards for onshore turbines seem adequate for the weather extremes that we're used to. The question is, you know, should those standards be increased because of changes that we're seeing in weather patterns? And that is something that I have written directly about to a contact on the Regional Assessment Committee, and he's acknowledged. I brought it up in one of their virtual engagement sessions as well. And it's certainly something that they're concerned about and giving consideration to. So back to the regional assessment, and really the purpose of my role is to try to help make sure that Nova Scotians are not blindsided by this industry. And when I was here in late June, I think I brought up that The minimum viable scale of a commercial development approaches the total generating capacity of Nova Scotia Power at this time. So this is very, very large. So the best opportunity for citizens to have an impact on how this develops is by contributing to the regional assessment. There's a list on the screen of all of the different aspects they're tasked with considering. It's very substantial and very comprehensive, and my sense is that the committee members are very, very capable and genuine and really do want to hear from people. Everything's being accelerated. When my project was conceived, the impact assessment was imagined to be a thing in the distant future. It actually began before my role was filled. So, you know, our project's on a long, slow wavelength that kind of suited the time frame when it was proposed, and everything is accelerated and is catching up to us. The Regional Assessment Committee is holding public engagement sessions this month, and the closest ones, they were not available when I sent the slides in not too long ago, but the closest ones to Lunenburg will be in Digby, Yarmouth, Shelburne, and Halifax, and those are October 23rd, 25th, 26th, and November 1st. I'll be happy to send a link to the schedule if that's wanted. It's also possible to make submissions digitally, and I think for the average citizen that'll be a little daunting because you have to log in and use either your Government of Canada key or your banking information. Anyway, I did it just so that I said, this is my job and I want to be able to speak from direct experience, and I made a submission. And if you're, you know, comfortable working with digital technology, then it wouldn't be really problematic. You also have to be comfortable with not being anonymous. I think that's all I prepared.
Oh, sweet. Okay, thank you, Ms. Chaplin. Are there any questions or comments for Christy? Go ahead, Councillor Haysom.
Thank you, Chair. The regional assessment, is there a contact that you have for this group? How long are they taking feedback, I guess? And this is all really interesting, but I'm wondering what you're asking of council or what you want our engagement to be with this issue.
First questions are easier. Easiest way to contact them is through a website. As it turns out, one of the co-chairs is also involved with the project that I'm involved with. He was involved with this project first and then accepted as a committee member. So I already have a bit of an email dialogue with him going on. And I'm not sure that it would be appropriate for me to provide his email address broadly. So the best way would be through their website. You can ask questions or make comments, and I'll send a link to the regional assessment website. They are mandated to have their recommendations ready for the federal minister by the fall of 2024. I believe it's September, so fairly soon. And their engagement sessions, I don't know if they'll be able to manage more than one, and it's very condensed into the month of October. For in-person sessions where the committee will travel. And then what I'm hoping is that if there are aspects of development that seem important to council, that you will make a submission and identify what you think would be best for this community in terms of, their principal responsibility is to identify the area where development and lease offerings will be made. So that's their first responsibility, but they can also articulate conditions that might be scored in lease evaluation, proposal evaluation. So, you know, if this council thinks it might be really important to score recyclable blade materials highly, let them know. And the more they hear from community members, the more weight their recommendations will carry with the minister. Does that make sense? So if you think types of community benefit agreements should be important, or you want to identify fishing banks that you would like to see remain as fishing banks, anything related to their huge list of considerations, anything that's relevant to council that you feel you can speak to, it will give the recommendations some weight, and their recommendations are not binding. So again, the more sort of input, the more credibility they will have.
Okay. Councillor DeLong, then Councillor Bell.
Are you visiting other municipal councils with this information, or are we special?
As many as I can.
Okay.
Yes.
You're special.
Yeah. You were the first.
Yeah.
Define special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I should have chosen my words a little more carefully.
I live here, but that's not why I'm here. It was Wendy Oikle who suggested during the Federation of Nova Scotia Municipalities Conference that I do this, and I thank you again for that. It's become sort of one of my streams of initiative. What I get credit for is public information sessions, and those are going to be held in libraries so far.
Okay, and when are those scheduled?
The first one was supposed to happen during, the first two, actually, during the recent hurricane. So they're rescheduled. I have four scheduled in October. It became complicated because the regional assessment doesn't want me to go out first. They're afraid people will get weary of the topic. And so I'm meant to be following them. Initially, it was I would be an opening act. And that's shifted in the last few weeks. But I don't think I'm answering your question.
No, you are. Maybe if you can put this information in your email that you'll be sending out as well, so that if we want to participate in those, we can.
Great. Yep. I don't have any scheduled in this municipality yet.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Councillor Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chaplin, first I want to say thank you for coming prepared to answer previous questions. And looking at the expression on the faces of the councillors, you have given them the sufficient answer they were looking for. So that's always a good thing. Can you give me an idea on the Scandinavian nations that have developed offshore wind energy, if it had had any negative effects on their fishing for their fishers, was there complications that we can try to avoid? Or maybe you can give some other examples, such as in the North Sea, but I'm not totally familiar with where offshore turbines have been located, only some minor stuff that I've read on the internet, trying to gauge for myself where we might be going. You would probably be much more qualified to answer this than me.
I really appreciate the question. Hoping you wouldn't get weary of me, I probably would like to give it careful research. I've asked a similar question of developers. There's a lot of enthusiasm for this industry on the part of port operators. So I was at in Sydney at a presentation by a Scandinavian developer, and they're building the turbines and they're pre-assembling, and they've made a remark about how this had just been a fishing village before and showed this vast expanse of industrial activity. And I said, what happened to the fishers? But I didn't get an answer.
That's my question.
Yeah, and that's a regenerative industry. That's where my heart lies, is finding a way to live in this planet that leaves it in good shape for the next generation. And I trust, I'm confident I'm not alone in that. So I'd like to work on some research so that I can give you a thorough, careful answer to that.
The reason that's important to me, many people in my family were affected in the collapse of the fisheries, if we go back a few years, and some could not return to fishing. And so you see people out in Alberta now working oil rigs. And the fishing industry was a nice, clean industry that provided a good income to them. So I'm fast-forwarding to this generation, and what few we have left in fishing, I'd hate to see them go through this again.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. And I will roll up my sleeves and dig hard and see what I can find out. I am aware that the UK is working on a report that will describe the economic impacts, rural economic impacts, so rural communities. There's still a trend towards urbanization, and yet offshore wind does, on the positive side, tend to present economic opportunities in rural communities. But specifically the fishing industry, I'll try to find out more.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions or comments for Ms. Chaplin? Hearing none, thank you so much for your presentation.
I'm glad to do it.
Okay, thank you. Now we will move on to 12.1. I'd like to have a motion to go in camera. Moved by Councillor Wynot, seconded by Mayor Bala-Vergetson. All right. All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously.